Darker Than Blue by Willis and Shante, who we will be talking to on the phone in the second half of the show. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, with my co-host Earlene Anthony, coming at you from Skid Row Studio. Our call-in number is 800-893-9562. Listen to us live, or you can download our show and any past show by Googling in skitrow.la and hit Qumran Report. Also with us in the studio is actor and community active Lee Shaw. This week on this Memorial Day, we will be talking about a salute to military veterans with three military veterans, my brothers, James Johnson and Reverend Roosevelt Johnson of Greenville, Mississippi, and Reverend Freddie Johnson of Memphis, Tennessee, and an interview with Willis Boyd and Shante Duncan of Positive Light Ministry. We here at Skid Row Studios would like to wish you a happy Memorial Day. We have with us on the line James Johnson and Reverend Roosevelt Johnson of Greenville, Mississippi, and Reverend Freddie Johnson of Memphis, Tennessee. Welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you. Brother Ishmael, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Let's start off. The first question that I'll be asking each one of you, I want to start off with James Johnson, James Shug Johnson, and then Reverend Roosevelt Johnson, and then Reverend Freddie Johnson. The first question is, what kind of effect did your military experience have on your life, Shug?
Well, it made me very aware of how precious life is. I mean, in any war situation, that's one of the first things that you learn. You know, your life is really expendable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's grace of God if you can go into a war and come back out in one piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But I thank the Lord that he was looking after me while I was over there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How about you, Reverend Roosevelt Johnson?
The one effect that it had on my life, it was my first time being a part of a proud organization, being from the sidewalks of Greenville, Mississippi, and wasn't really a proud individual because of the segregation era. I remember just as well when I first thought to be proud was when Jane Brown came out with the record, Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's when I thought of trying to be proud. But what it did, it gave me an opportunity to be a part of a unit, a proud organization. It also helped me to take responsibility, you know, for my action. Some of the things that happened to me in the military, you know, I look back on, part of it was my action because I was a product of a racist society.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot of hatred in my heart. So I was a pretty rough fella to get along with. But I found out that you have to be careful and you're responsible for your action. And I always said that if you man enough to even break a law, commit a crime, then you'd be man enough to do the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that military taught me that, and I thank God for that.
Okay. How about you, Reverend Freddie Johnson?
Well, as you know, I kind of went in the military at the age of 17. And I'd like to say I kind of came to manhood in the military. And while in the military, I experienced things that I didn't experience while I was growing up in Greenville, Mississippi. Like, for instance, being around white folks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to high school, it was all black. So I got to actually, for the first time, be around white folks in the military. And I'd like to piggyback off what Rep. Roosevelt said. It was kind of, to me, a racist. How could I say this? I don't want to say the wrong thing, but kind of a racist move in the military during those days. Because I was one of the only black, you know, Air Police outfit that I was in.
Mm-hmm.
Seen another guy named Dane Bart. And Mr. Johnson, we called it. We called it prejudice from both ends.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not only from the white, from also from some of the black guys, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess our intelligence and our promotions, you know, getting promoted, things of that nature. But
she was in the Air Force.
I stopped right there, kind of grew up in the military.
Mm-hmm. And you was in the Air Force?
Air Force.
Yeah.
But I was at police.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the next question. And let's start with you, Fred. What is the biggest problem facing veterans today?
Being service connected. That's and I like to, you did say start with me, right?
Yes.
Becoming service connected and knowing about our benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Because here in Memphis, I am kind of many veterans that doesn't really know how to get their benefits and the benefits that they are entitled to. So that's what I would say is the biggest problem facing veterans in Memphis today.
Yes. How about you, Shug? What's the biggest problem you think facing veterans today?
Well, I'd have to reiterate what Fred has said, man. Biggest problem is most veterans don't even know how to go about getting the benefits. But for the veterans that's coming out of the service, I say the first thing you would have to do is file, if you think anything is wrong with this, file for your benefits right after you get out, because they don't give you but a year, 1 year. After that year is up and you file, that's when you start having a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you start having a problem, right? They give you a year, but they don't tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you 1 year to file on anything that's wrong with you. When you get wounded, anything like that, they give you a year. Now, if you can file within that year, you stand a good chance of getting your benefits right off, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, man, if you go past that, then you might probably need to get your lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Past that year,
right? That's right. You probably need to get your lawyer, man. That's the kind of problem you're going to have getting paid.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about you, Reverend Roosevelt Johnson?
In conjunction with what has already been said, I think another major issue is PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
PTSD,
right.
Post-traumatic stress.
Mm-hmm.
And, being in a war zone or being around action that traumatizes you takes an effect, and that's something that medical doctor have not yet come to grip to deal with the problem as it should be dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big problem. And I tell you another that I've learned since my military experience. You know, while you're in the military, they tell you, you know, some of the benefits you have, such as an opportunity to get in house if you come out with honorable discharge. I believe that's just a sales pitch. There are documents that you can get a house, but the house in market and the bank treat you, you know, just like a civilian, and your credit report has a lot to do with it. Yeah, because of the economy issue, most Afro-American credit is not what the military standard is asking, and that individual never have an opportunity to use that housing benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of things need to be revisited. And I tell you another issue is finding employment because the scarceness of jobs out here now. I think our president came up with an idea that they could ex-military personnel could be hired as police officer, fireman, you know, government job, train, what have you. That would be good because it would open up a job market for veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout my life, I have been told that veteran has first priority at jobs, but that's just a sales pitch. You and I know that's not true.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this. First, with you and Shug in Greenville, and then Fred in Memphis, can you talk about, because, you know, out here where we at in Los Angeles, Los Angeles is the homeless capital of the United States with people laying on the streets in Skid Row, which is about 70-75% of African Americans. What is the homeless situation in Greenville like, and how many veterans is involved in the homeless situation? And then I want to go to the same thing with Fred in Memphis. But let's start with Greenville.
It's not as many homeless here in Greenville as it is in L.A., but I think if you would go with the population-wise, the ratio might be similar. Now, I say that to say this, that there are homeless people here in Greenville.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of my ministry as well, I've made myself known and acquainted with majority of them. And I'll be honest with you. I asked myself, I said, Lord, never allow me to be in that situation where I have to sleep outside, you know, in the summertime among the mosquitoes, in the wintertime among mm-hmm. snow or in abandoned houses or what have you. But the number is on the rise, and there are various areas now where you can go and sometime, I know one or two that are allowed to do work issues around the ministry just to earn a few dollars to help them out. And everyone I use, I pay $10 plus an hour. I want to make sure I'm paying them a good fair price for whatever I ask them to do
mm-hmm.
because I want to make sure I'm treating them just as we would treat, you know, regular people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be guilty of using a person. So I have a good relationship with the majority of them around here.
Now, and this is for you too, Shug, and then I'm going to get to Fred in Memphis. But how many of the, is it many homeless veterans around Greenville?
Yeah, there's quite a few, man. But like dude was saying, man, that the ratio is not like it is in Los Angeles or other big cities because, you know, our population
mm-hmm.
is not as large as you guys. So, but there are homeless veterans around here.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of them need psychological help, man, because they're just out on the streets, man.
Mm-hmm. Majority.
Yeah, we got guys that walk around here begging, but they get it. A couple of guys is getting their VA checks, but somebody else is over there checking them because they aren't capable of handling their own, you know, resources.
Mm-hmm. You mean traumatized from the military?
Right. Right. I think that's more of a mental
right.
issue.
Yeah, it is.
That's more
of,
and then, I mean, it can be veteran connected, but you also have people that are homeless that never been in the military.
Right.
So it's and then you got other things out here that cause problems with the mind, certain drugs, narcotics, what have you.
Yeah.
I noticed there's a increase in people walking around now on sidewalks talking to themselves.
Yeah.
Right.
And they're talking out loud like they're talking to another person. So, you know, a lot is going on, and to give you some kind of ballpoint numbers, maybe I know of 12 or more homeless peoples, and maybe 4 to 6 could be veterans.
Okay, so that's a large percentage of that. Now, Fred, what's the situation like in Memphis?
Well, I agree with everything Reverend Roosevelt and Sylvia saying, but I still look at it this way. There are many homeless veterans here in Memphis. Now, some choose to be homeless. Because every time I go to the VA here in Memphis, outside in the lobby or in the parking lot, they always have some kind of meal or something set up for the veterans, you know, that come to the hospital. Now, some of them don't know where to go to get this kind of help.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they got shelters, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
But they just won't go. I have had homeless veterans tell me that they don't need what the VA is giving them. They'd rather be on the street.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Rather than deal with the VA.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I could understand why if you, like Roosevelt said, the PTSD thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's an illness that at first, when the veterans is released from active duty, that they didn't know about. I'm just looking at my own situation.
Mm-hmm.
They diagnosed me with severe depression. But as they study PTSD now, I've been diagnosed with PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And I thank God that I know where to go, get help, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many veterans out here in Memphis right now that doesn't have to be in the situation they are in.
Mm-hmm.
They got plenty. They got help for them, but they just won't go get it.
Mm-hmm. Now, sure. Let me ask you this. How about the new group of veterans that's coming out of, just say, Iraq and Afghanistan, where they had to deal with a lot of, you know, Vietnam was, you dealt with guerrilla warfare, whereas, you know, jungle guerrilla warfare, and Iraq and Afghanistan, you're dealing with, you know, within the urban guerrilla warfare. What do you think of, in terms of how these particular veterans would be traumatized? And are we going to see a lot of that, or are we beginning to see it already?
Already seeing it,
mm-hmm.
Right? A lot of these guys are traumatized. That's an altogether different war.
Mm-hmm.
It's been two wars since Vietnam. There's the Gulf War, and then this war that's going that we just got out of.
Yeah.
And the conditions, everything was different, man.
Mm-hmm.
So you're gonna have a whole new set of problems with the veterans that are coming out of this war.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right? Because there's a lot more come out of this war that's maimed and crippled than the war that came out of Vietnam.
With these improvised explosive devices that they use in the urban conflict. Even though they had a lot of that in Vietnam, it's a little bit different, though.
It's different, a lot different. Mm-hmm. And another thing, what I was saying is that for a guy, see, a lot of guys, it may take years before they realize that anything is wrong with them. You
mm-hmm.
know what I'm saying? The PTSD, it doesn't just come on all of a sudden. It can take years for it to set in, you know?
Mm-hmm. And some kind of trigger
right.
or something like that to trigger
right.
it off.
So you should stay in touch with your VA, and sometimes you have to ask for them class because you know you're gonna suffer from something. Anybody that be in a war suffer from PTSD in some form or another.
Mm-hmm.
So the best thing for you for the young guy that's coming out in that 1 year period is to get something in black and white. You know,
mm-hmm.
get something started. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's
okay.
Because I think
if they let a year pass. Then they start having problems when
mm-hmm.
they go to the VA.
Mm-hmm. What you were saying, Fred?
I think they're going to have a better outlook on getting the help. The one that's just coming out these new walls
yeah.
and the Vietnam veterans did. Because they know more about what's going on now. They know more about that
PTSD. That's going to take advantage of it, man. I see a lot of guys, like just like you were saying, that a lot of guys are out there, man, and they don't even try to. Mm-hmm. I tried to help about 10 or 12 guys over in Leland and other places, man. Them guys wasn't thinking about the VA.
Yeah.
But that's because of their mental condition.
That's right.
That has a lot to do. That's your key right there. Right. And something else, you know, if you're homeless, sometimes, you know, according to man-made law, you too poor to get help, which means if you don't have a stationary address, then they reluctant to... give you, you know, any kind of assistance. You got to have a stationary address in order to get assistance.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be some of the condition, but most of it is basically mental.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, I think a question came up of how do we minister to these vets?
Yeah, and that's what I want to ask you next. Yeah, go off into that.
Okay, well, this is what we do. We go and befriend them, you know, outreach ministry, because they're not coming to church. They are lovable humans and people just like we are, just people with problems.
Yeah.
And all of us have problems. We just don't have the same problem.
Yeah.
But we go out and befriend them and make them feel worthwhile. Might have church picnic. We've had them overeating and having good time. I've seen them pull off their clothes and play basketball with the other adults and just have the time of their life. And then, as Fred has stated earlier, it's a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've cleaned them up and they go right back to the same situation. Mm-hmm. So, I just shake my head. I know one guy, we have a good relationship, and this is something that he chooses to do. Even not just me in the ministry, but his own people are trying to get him off the street. But it's a choice. It's something that they decide that they want to do.
Now,
these guys have problems.
As we wind down, I want to ask all three of you, what would you like to say to John and Bobby, who served in the Army and the Air Force?
It seemed to be, though, I heard you earlier, out of the seven boys, six of us serve in the armed forces.
Yes.
So it seemed to be a family tradition. And we all basically chose what branch of service that we want to serve in other than myself. Now, I don't know about the others, but I can speak for myself. I was drafted. Brother Johnson, was drafted into the military.
Mm-hmm.
And I was among the last of the draftees. They took our picture at the reception station, which means, after my look, after they draft me, they cut out the draft and made it an all-volunteer army.
Mm-hmm.
So I was somewhere I didn't really ask to be. And during that era, if you was Afro-American and was drafted, they gave you a rifle and put you in infantry and shipped you to Vietnam.
Yep.
And that's why I was drafted. Should have been a two-year term. But those little tests that you take, I've scored so many 100s on the test, the guy gave me an opportunity to sign up, choose my MOS, and go to school.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I end up with trying to do 2 years. I end up with 3 years and, 21 months and some days, what have you.
Yeah.
But back then, you didn't have a choice, and that's what they were doing. I think I heard you say, somebody said the average soldier back during the Vietnam era was 19 years old.
Yep.
That's right.
Yeah, 19.
So those, we was kids.
Yeah,
you know,
young.
We was kids, right. So
okay.
That's what we do. We go out and try to help them now.
How about you, Fred, and Shug? What would you say? What you like to say to John and Bobby, who served? John served in the Army, Bobby served in the Air Force.
Well, I like to say this to John and Bobby. John still in the Army. Bob is still in the Air Force. And I'm going to say that Air Force was a good choice, buddy. Because yeah. I went in the Air Force. And, after I talked to the recruiter at Coleman High School, and I was, just turning 17, but I was coming out of high school, I couldn't wait to get in the Air Force. And the MOS that I wanted was Air Police. And that's what I got.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but I have to commend all my brothers for going in the military.
Okay.
And it, to me, it helped us grow up because we came out of Greenville, Mississippi. Wasn't a whole lot of stuff down there for us.
Yes.
We had one book and all that kind of stuff for a while. But when I got in the military, that's when I, like I said before, that's when I grew up.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. Okay. Yeah, Reverend Freddie Johnson, of Memphis, Tennessee, James Johnson, Reverend Roosevelt Johnson down in Greenville, Mississippi. Now, later on in the show, the last part of the show, I'm going to read a portion of Reverend Roosevelt Johnson's play, Private Johnson's War, in which we perform Saturday. Excellent performance, and I sent you... the photographer shot a nice little section and put it on YouTube. Yeah, and I sent that section for you to see. So this
excellent
will be
job.
Yeah, this will be coming on the latter part of the show. So okay,
great.
Thank you, James Johnson and Reverend Roosevelt Johnson of Greenville, Mississippi, and Reverend Freddie Johnson of Memphis, Tennessee. And a shout out to Nita and Barbara and to all of my family in Greenville, Mississippi.
Right.
You're
welcome.
Hey, have a good evening.
You too,
though.
Godspeed.
Bye-bye.
Yes. Okay, let's take a break for our community calendar, and then we'll come back with Willis and Shante on the line from Positive Light Ministry.
This is the community calendar for the month of June. Sunday, June the 2nd, from 12 noon to 3 p.m. Serve the Warriors present a community drum circle with special guest, Help Rhythm Drums Facilitator, Michael and Christy. Serve the Warriors' mission is creating community space that support healing and provide therapeutic tools to defend against the invisible wounds that American veterans bring home from war. This event is being held Sunday, June the 2nd, Garden Cottage Gallery, 1858 Echo Park Avenue in Echo Park, California. This is free and open to all the veterans and families of veterans. You're asked to please RSVP by Friday, May the 31st. And for further information or contact information, info@servethewarriors.org or 213-864-2878. The next Veterans Community Theater Workshop will be held on Tuesday, June 11th from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. Once again, this workshop is free to veterans and non-veterans. The workshop participants are currently working on individual plays and also rehearsing other stage plays. The location is the Vortex, 2341 West Olympic Boulevard. This is near the corner of Santa Fe and Olympic, and the Metro Bus 60 and 66 stops near or close to the corner. For more information on the workshop, you can call 213-908-6587. And this is a note for the Roby Theater, Bronzeville. This is Project Bronzeville 2013. The Roby Theater Company presents Bronzeville by Tim Toriyama and Aaron Woolford, directed by Ben Guillory, June 29th through July 21st. Learn how a little-known period in the history of Los Angeles helped to shape the city we have now. The location is the LATC 514 South Spring Street, Los Angeles 913. And the website is www.robytheatercompany.com. Also, June the 1st through the 30th, exhibitions of work by Katie Foley Meyer. And the location of this is the Union Center for the Arts. On June the 22nd, Downtown Independent Theater Symposium, moderated by Christopher Jimenez West and Dr. Hillary Jinks with Dr. Anthony Macias. On June the 23rd, live jazz concert at the Blue Whale, featuring the Miguel Atwood Ferguson Ensemble. Opening night for the performance of Bronzeville is June the 29th. And for more information, time, and places of this event, please call the Roby Theater Company, 213-489-7402. Once again, the phone number is 213-489-7402. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com, attention Earlene Anthony. The call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Okay, thank you, Miss Earlene Anthony. Now we're on the line with Willis and Shantae of Positive Light Ministry, who performed last Saturday, May the 25th, 2013, at the USC Peace Center. Willis and Shantae, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Hey, Melvin.
Hey.
So glad to hear your voice. We got Earlene and Lee sitting in the studio right here to also to conversate with you.
Hey, Lee.
Tell us, let's start off with the first question that everybody asks. What is Positive Light Ministries?
Positive Light Ministries is a faith-based organization. We're a Christian organization, and we try to offer music lessons and art lessons and puppetry for youth, and just try to inspire and glorify God and what we believe we were called to do. So we try to reach out to kids through programs like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, and that's the next question I was going to ask you, is how do you use your artistic talents to minister to young people? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Melvin, what we do is, music is a very powerful force. You can move nations with music, win elections with the right music. If you can use music that children are familiar with in preaching a word or just trying to, get interest or pull things together, dance, then kids are interested in that. So
you try to find music that kids can relate to, whether it be with rap or just songs that we feel that youth can relate to and that they can find similar to their own lifestyles and things mm-hmm. that they see in their own lives. We try to make music that they would like, and that mm-hmm. would get their attention.
Now, how did Positive Light Ministry start? How did you get your beginnings?
Just a man like everybody else messing up in life, just wondering what my purpose was, and I prayed to God, and I believe that God told me to work with children. I started down at the L.A. Mission, volunteering in the baggage department there, hooked up with the Say Yes organization, which was a children's ministry. And through that organization, looking and seeing, what the kids really needed, and then tried to fill in the voids to take the program to the next level. Mm-hmm. for the children, and that's how Positive Light Ministries was founded, was that we saw needs that other programs were not really delivering. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they weren't addressing, and so that's where Positive Light tried to assist.
Okay. Now, what I want to do now, I would like to play one of the songs that you performed Saturday entitled Butterfly, and then we're going to play a couple of minutes of that, and then we'll come back and discuss how Butterfly came about. So right okay. now, we're going to play Butterfly. Butterfly, very beautiful song that I like a lot. Can you tell our listening audience how did Butterfly come about?
Willis got inspiration for Butterfly when he went to Gladys Park, and there was just a lot of things that he saw around there that were
Gladys
not
Park
positive, and you go to a park. Mm-hmm.
Park and Skid Row?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And usually when you go to a park, you see, you know, positive things with kids playing and, you know, families and people playing and just having a good time. And that's not what he saw when he was down there. And that kind of was the inspiration.
And also, your play Down on the Nickel.
Surviving
the Nickel.
Yes.
If you listen, there's a lyric in there saying, down on the nickel.
Yes.
Getting on my hustle. If these fools try to push me out, it's going to be a scuffle.
Yes.
So there was a lot of different inspirations, and I can say Surviving the Nickel is truly a lyric in that song.
It was one of the inspirations.
So, you know, down there cleaning and seeing them selling cocaine, you know, coke, rocks, crack. But there's a lot of different inspirations, but it was from being down there in it.
Mm-hmm. Just seeing the same issues mm-hmm. over and over and just the same problems and not really seeing any change.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, Saturday, you performed a great skit called Kiara and Wendell Dealing with Military Veterans. Now, how did this come about? Talk about that a lot. Got a great response from that.
Well, I've tried. Sorry if I sound a little redundant. you were kind of the inspiration behind that as well. When we go to your classes on Tuesday, your theater classes, or what do you call that?
The Veterans Community Theater Workshop.
Right. When we go to that on the Tuesdays, you're teaching and showing us.
It was actually on the way home when you were driving. Willis was driving, and he was just saying that he wanted to do a skit, and he was kind of developing a character right when we were coming back from the theater workshop. I think it's when you started talking about it.
Yeah, but it's because of him showing us the right way to do things. Then I asked Shante, I says, let's work on this thing together. I says, you develop a character, and I'll develop a character, and then we'll sit down and we'll hash this thing out.
Yeah, it's two great characters, real characters, too. Now, I got Lee and Earlene, they have a couple questions. What do you want to ask Willis and Shante?
I want to ask, when you're writing a song, do you come up with the lyrics first or the melody tune, or which comes first, the words or the melody or the tune, or do they come at the same time?
As Shante, let Shante answer that.
Okay. For me, usually the lyrics will come first. Mm-hmm. Willis will already have the music, and he'll ask me to write something, but even when I'm trying to write something for myself or on my own, I usually come up with the lyrics first and then try to get the melody or something.
Mm-hmm. And for me, it's just basically, it just comes. The words might come.
Yeah, for him, it's either or.
Yeah, or the music might come. But usually it's generally based on being inspired to do something in a certain area, be it puppets, like a puppet show.
Mm-hmm.
You find a theme, and then you just try to write around that.
Okay.
Here's Lee with a question coming up.
Well, how y'all doing there?
Good, Lee. How are you?
Fine. You already answered most of my questions. But I did have, because, you know, I think y'all are great, you know, great performance.
Uh-huh.
And to do that, I mean, I think, you know, that you have to rehearse a lot, right? So my question to you, how often do you rehearse?
You know what? Not often enough.
Oh, man. So if you're great now, you're dynamite later, right?
Lee, we appreciate what you're saying, but you know what? I want to just tell you that you're an awesome man yourself, and we really appreciate, you know, your readiness to get up and to serve and to do what it is, whatever needs to be done. You're ready to do it and get it done, so things can run, you know, like they're supposed to. So we're admiring you just as much. So, you know, we really appreciate you. All right.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. But I appreciate y'all, too, because, you know, helping children is one of the things. You know, when I grew up, when I was coming up, they had, you know, outlets for us. We had the boxing thing at the park, and we had, you know, different little things, the teen post and all that right there. And these days, they don't have that right there. And you provide, and your Positive Life Ministry is going back to that, providing for those children some outlet, you know.
Right.
And that's, and I hope God continue to bless you, both of you. You know,
well, we pray the same for you guys.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this. What would you like to say to our veterans on this Memorial Day?
Well, first I would like to say to you and Earlene and Enley and Judy, and that whole thing that you did on Saturday was brilliant. Mm. And I want to thank you guys for it, because it inspires me to, like Lee was saying, to practice harder and to become better at our craft.
Yeah, to take it seriously. It was a lot of inspiring people that were there and really beautiful thing.
That was so awesome. The writing, everything, it just builds us up, and that's inspiration for us to do better.
Mm-hmm.
Working on the Kiara and Wendell skit, we touched on some things, or I touched on some things with the military. Who was the guy?
Kovic was his last name.
Kovic.
Mm-hmm.
We did a little research And there's just no way that we can imagine what those guys
went through
or are going through. And I feel ashamed that I haven't done anything, I don't believe, to try to help in ways that this play or, you know, we can try to bring attention and try to do things in the area or the avenues that you're putting out there. But there are no words to express what those guys have gone through for us.
For our freedom. For
we
our freedom.
Don't appreciate it.
Right.
And just to pray and to thank God for every soldier that is out there that's going through anything, and the soldiers that are out there right now.
Mm-hmm.
We don't understand.
And then I hope to, the show is over. We still got a few minutes to talk to Mr. Gorky, a Vietnam veteran also. But let me just say this. Thank you so much, Willis and Shante, and a shout out to Denise, Ebony, Savannah, and Hi's grandpa.
He's great. We ate dinner with him tonight.
He's good.
Okay. All right. So thank you very much for all of your great talents, all the great show that you put on, and have a good evening.
Yeah.
You too,
Alvin. All right. That's Willis and Shante of Positive Light Ministry. I wanted to, do we still, Mr. Gorky is still online, eh? Yeah, I wanted to, I was hoping to have enough time to read a portion from the play Private Johnson's War. Mr. Gorky.
Yes, sir.
Hey, how you doing? So much, so glad to hear your voice. I know you got a deep message on this Memorial Day, like you always do.
Don't you know I got a deep?
Yeah. Come on, say that again. You're kind of fading out on me.
All right. Yes, sir. I got a deep one today.
Yeah. Tell us something.
Yes, sir. Okay, sir. I'm wishing all the veterans a happy holiday, those who are alive and those families that's well-to-do today. I wish them all a blessing. And you too, sir, and thank you for your services and for my country and all the people that's there. I didn't get to hear this anything tonight, but I have to come with a new thing tonight. I have to bring to you is blood mist.
Mm-hmm.
Blood mist consists of blood in the air. We look at age, you know, like somebody else look at age. You know, you look at age that's putting on gloves to be safe and all that. But do you really think how much blood mist is in the air when combat is going on?
I know. But, Mr. Gorky, let me ask you this before you get off into this, because I want the people to know who I'm speaking with here.
Yes, sir.
And an outstanding veteran. Tell us a little about your military, sir. We still got a couple minutes that I want you to, I want to talk about you. Tell our listening audience about your military service, your Vietnam experience.
My life consisted of, at 19 years old, I was in the United States Marine Corps. I went to Vietnam, did two tours. I was a place called Khe Sanh. And I earned a President Unit Citation and many other medals. Was known as a hero to a military session, but to civilians, I'm just average Joe. And I kind of like that, you know. I'm not, at so hard. But now I have a little freedom to walk around. But I've served my country. One of the highest medals in the Marine Corps, the President Unit Citation handed to me by President Johnson, spoke to me about President Obama. Obama recognized in the President's speech, well-recognized for his speech, because, I'm in history for the rest of my life. My name is, my family name is, I've served my country.
Let me, We got about another minute while I have you on the line. What I want you to we have all of these military veterans coming out this Iraqi Afghanistan war.
Yes, sir.
Advice would you give them that would help them adjust back to society?
That you got to adjust to would be this. Because the adjustment is how the system adjusts to us when we come home. It's horrible how the adjustment is. But to get it to get your head straight and get on straight is to mean to get medical checkups. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't think that nobody in America doesn't care about you. There's a lot of people out there that don't, but there's a lot of people out there too.
Okay.
So your best thing is to help yourself most of all and sit down with counselors and sit down with other veterans and work it out. Because
okay.
it's something that you'll never forget in what
okay.
you've done. You know, you'll never forget that. And most men that live in America that never experienced that, they have no idea what you're talking about. So
okay.
there is a connection between military soldiers when they come home and civilian men when we meet them back in the States again. They don't have all the respect is gone, is lost for the American soldier when he comes home. He doesn't get like my father got or my father preferred for him got when he came home. We
okay.
don't get the same things.
Okay, and Mr. Gorka, you know we're gonna get you up into this radio station so we can do a whole program like we did the last time. So,
yes, sir.
Yeah. So,
but I would love to speak on this matter.
I would like
to have some of the veterans to add in on what I'm saying, or is what's going on, and that. It's not being recognized.
Okay.
The government won't recognize it.
All right.
And the young men that are sitting there probably are combat veterans themselves, and they don't even know what was going on.
Okay, well,
we're
winding down. We'll get a chance to talk about it. Thank you so much for calling in.
Yes, sir.
All right,
I will call again.
It's Mr. Gorky. We're going to get him the honorably discharged, decorated Marines. We'll get him up in here. Now, I would like to extend a special thanks to my brothers, James Johnson and Reverend Roosevelt Johnson of Greenville, Mississippi, and Reverend Freddie Johnson of Memphis, Tennessee. My co-host, Earlene Anthony, my in-studio guest, actor, community activist, Lee Shaw, on the line with Willis and Shantae of Positive Light Ministry. Please listen to past shows of the Qumran Report on iTunes, Facebook, Skidrow.LA. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. And from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, may the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. I leave you with the song that opened the show, Darker Than Blue by Willis and Shantae.
Are we going to live around this town? And yet we're